So, good afternoon. Welcome to my session, What is New in PowerShell 5, or 5.x for the IT Pro. At least as much as I can cover in 45 minutes, because it's just too much to do in 45 minutes. My name is Ben Gelens. I'm a Cloud and Data Center Management MVP, formerly nominated to be PowerShell MVP, but they stuck the PowerShell guys in the CDM group. I work for a Dutch consulting company called Innovatief. And I'm pretty active on Twitter and a couple of community sites. I blog at a couple of sites as well. So if you're interested in the work I do, you will be able to find me quite easily. So funny thing is, when I was starting to work on this session, like a week ago, I put out this tweet on Twitter. I had a hard time picking my demos for this session. And actually, Mr. PowerShell, Jeffrey Snover himself, he reacted to me, but good luck with that, Ben, because V1 is not even covered yet, so we're still explaining that stuff. So what we are dealing with in this session is really just the tip of the iceberg, not even the piece that is surfacing on top of the water level, but just a little piece from the very end of it. So first off, the agenda. Going to have a little talk about the availability, how to get your hands on PowerShell 5, how to get your fix. Then we'll have a quick overview slide with a whole bunch of new cool capabilities. And then we'll dive into demos. This is a PowerShell session, so it's demo heavy. It's also a fast-paced session, but not necessarily we need to get to the ending. So if you feel we're going too fast, just interrupt me and maybe we can address a little bit more, okay? After those demos, we will look at some capabilities Windows Server 2016 and Windows 10, and also Nano Server brings in the mix with PowerShell 5, because the OS platform actually enhances the PowerShell experience as well. And to finalize, a couple of demos again. So availability. PowerShell 5 is part of Windows Server 2016 and Windows 10 Nano Server. Well, actually, with 2016, we get already PowerShell 5.1. It's continuously updated, so if you are running one of those latest OSs, there's no need for you to figure out how to get your PowerShell. It's just there. But if you are on a down-level OS, like Windows Server 2008 or 2, or Windows Server 2012 or 2012 or 2, or one of the client OSs back until Windows 7, then you can download what is called the Windows Management Framework. And the Windows Management Framework, you can get that through the Microsoft sites. And they already announced that they will bring out a new release, WMF 5.1, in the near future. And it will supersede 5.0. So you will get 4 months of migration time from Microsoft. And after those 4 months, they expect you to be on 5.1. So what's new? Well, it's probably too small to read. But we get a whole bunch of new stuff in PowerShell 5. We get PowerShell classes and enums. This is why PowerShell 5 is also thought of as being a bit of a developer release. There's a lot of desired state configuration improvements. With desired state configuration, it's just too much to cover in this session. It will need its own session to just highlight desired state configuration. But if we have time, we will look at a certain piece that might be of interest to you. Copy over PowerShell session, system-wide transcription, script block logging, and so on. So to make this a bit easy on you, I actually highlighted in orange what we will cover, what we are certain of in the time we have for this session, and the stuff in blue we will cover if we still have time left. And with that, I think it's time for demos. So just to give you a little notice, I'm running a Nano Server here, and it's the latest TP5 build. And this will be the last time I log into this console because, well, there's nothing we can do from this end with PowerShell, of course. So we could only reset WinRM. So if we messed up our Windows Remote Management story, we could reset it here, and then we should be able to try and remote into the Nano Server again. And on the other note, I'm running Windows Server 2016 Technical Preview 5 as well. So for the first demo, I'd I will cover copying files over PowerShell sessions. So what we'll do is we will copy some files over to that nano server through a PowerShell remoting session. First, I'm going to put this password in this variable. And then I'm going to create what is called a hash table. And in this hash table, I have a couple of keys with a couple of values. And those keys, they will map to the parameters used with new PS session. So this is a little technique we call splatting. Is we define a hash table up front, and then we use the at sign with the commandlet to splat those keys against the commandlet. And it will interpret the hash table as being a parameter with values. So why do we do this? It's for readability, right? If I would write the entire commandlet string on one line, it will probably run off screen, and it's not really pretty for your eyes. So let's do that. And we now have a PowerShell session to that nano server, as you can see here. So what we will do now is create on this local Windows Server 2016 box a little text file containing some text like PowerShell rocks. And what we will do is we will use the copy item commandlet with the toSession parameter. And the toSession parameter actually takes a PowerShell session object, and it will allow us to copy over this text file through that nano server. So let's do that now. And maybe it went a bit too quick, but it has made it over. So let's check that out. Let's enter the PS session we just created, and let's have a look at the root. And there we have that text file. It made it over that PowerShell session. So this really is handy when you're running your VMs, for example, in Azure, and you don't have any SMB connectivity to it. Now, it can also be reversed. So let's create a file on this nano server. We're still on the nano server, as you can see by the IP address here. Let's exit that PS session. And now we copy item again, but this time with the from session parameter. Let's do that. And sure, we have cdc2.txt on my local system right now. You can think of this as being equivalent to what Linux users have been using for a long time, is a secure copy protocol, the SCP. There's also an awesome new feature of PowerShell 5. So I've entered the nano server session again, is we can now remotely edit those files through the ISE editor. So you can see PowerShell rocks, and I can do something like CDC rules, save it, and we just remotely edited that file. So it's really cool if you want to edit your script files through this manner. It's all pretty easy to do. And that's the end of the first demo. Have any questions on this? OK, let's move on. Another cool feature that PowerShell 5 brought to the table was archive commandlets. Probably in the past, you have struggled using zip files with PowerShell, right? So the PowerShell team has made it easy. They created that archive PowerShell module. Here it's version 1. And what they actually did when they released WMF5, they also open sourced this module and made it publicly available. And now you can also install it through the PowerShell gallery on systems with PowerShell 4. Why PowerShell 4 and not 3? PowerShell 4 leverages .NET Framework 4.5, which contains the base class utilized by this module. So the least version for PowerShell using archive module is PowerShell 4. And we can go ahead and look inside of the PowerShell gallery, and we see, oh, there's a newer version there. But the newer version only has this increment because it's made compatible down level. That's everything that has changed. So if we look at the commandlets they put in that module, we got compress archive and expand archive. So I think they're pretty self-explanatory. Again, we will create a hash table. But in this case, what we will do is the Panther directory will be zipped up into this csysprep.zip file. Okay, this doesn't exist just yet. We will have a default compression level of fastest, but we also have other options like no compression or optimal. And a thing to note is the compress archive has a force switch, and with the force switch enabled, if you use that, then actually it will override the zip file if it already exists. So it will not append files in that zip file. It will just override it. And we also set the verbose stream to true, so you have something to see. Let's load that into memory and compress that directory. So you see it added a bunch of files, and now we have that sysprep.zip file created here in the root of the C drive. Now, if we want to add, like for example, the calculator.exe, let's override the path from that hash table. As you can see, now the hash table actually contains the calculator.exe path. And let's try to add that to that zip file. And now it's throwing an error. And actually, it's a pretty decent error because it tells you, well, if you want to add the file, use the update switch. Or if you want to override the archive, use the for switch. So what we will do, because we want to add on the calculator.exe, we just add the update switch and try again. And now you see we have actually appended calculator.exe in this archive file. Now, this module doesn't contain any peak functionality. So we don't have any capability of looking inside of the module, inside of the archive. By making use of this .NET class, zip file class, which is actually the same class used with this archive PowerShell module, we can just use open read static method with it and pass along the path of that that archive. And now let's have a peek inside that zip file. So it's pretty quick. You can see that the calculator.exe has indeed made it in together with the other files. So if you feel like it, you can go into GitHub and maybe fork the PowerShell archive module, add in a little function to peek in zip files, and maybe do a pull request because it's open for suggestions. So if you feel like it, you could just add your code to this. Finally, we have the expand archive. Of course, we created an archive file, and now we need to open it up, and we use expand archive for that. So it's easy as that. And if we now have a look at csysprep, we can see that we have the penta directory and the calculator.exe available. So that's the archive module. So package management. Who here already uses package management? Wow, that's a lot of you. So package management is like what Linux has, like yum to install packages, like apt-get to install packages, but this time for Windows machines. So package management is actually a PowerShell module which utilizes what we call providers. And providers are little pieces of logic and functionality that know how to deal with, for example, MSI files, or with NuGet packages, or with zip files. And those providers, they can have one or multiple sources. And a source is like a remote repository containing those packages you want to install. So if we have a quick peek at the package management module, we can see that we have a version 1.001, and it has a bunch of commandlets. So we have find package provider, get package, and so forth. These are the base commandlets to deal with package with installing packages. So if we have a quick look at the package providers that currently are loaded with my system, we can see we have an MSI, MSU, a NuGet package provider, a PowerShell get package provider, and this is the one dealing with the PowerShell gallery. Anybody here uses the PowerShell gallery? Got a couple of hands, good. So this package provider knows how to deal with the PowerShell gallery, okay? And if you think, well, I need another package provider, then if somebody already put in an additional package provider in the PowerShell gallery, we can use the find package provider commandlet to find additional providers. So we can see now we have, for example, the chocolatey provider, which knows how to deal with chocolate packages. And we could use install package provider to install one of those additional providers and extend our package management story. So it's an extensible platform to deal with packages. Now, as I already told, the package providers, they make use of package sources. And you can see one of those package sources printed out here using the get package source commandlet. So we have the PowerShell gallery. You can see its location. And it's good to know that, in this case, the PowerShell gallery has not been trusted by the end user. So every time I download and install a package from the PowerShell gallery, PowerShell will actually inform me that I'm downloading stuff from an external, untrusted remote source, and if I'm really sure of that. Additional sources can be registered using the register package source commandlet. So you could interchange, for example, this PowerShell gallery resource with your internal one. Now, the PowerShell GET package provider is also a PowerShell module. So package providers can be modules as well. If you look at the commands exposed for that PowerShell GET package provider, we can see that we have like install module, install script. It actually makes a little bit more sense than typing install package if you want to install a script from the PowerShell gallery, right? So these functions actually leverage the package management commands underneath, but make it easier for you to do a think, type, get kind of scenario. I think about modules, I'm going to install a module. I'm not thinking about installing a package. So let's have a look at some modules which are available in the PowerShell gallery, which I ordered and put in there. You can see a bunch of them they come by. So the find module uses the get package underneath, goes into the PowerShell gallery, gets all the content from that, and then we use the where object to filter them out, right? The same thing could be done with the native package management commandlet. So we could have used find package instead. Next thing we can do is, from the PowerShell gallery, in this case, we will save a module to disk. So why should you install just straight away if maybe that package contains malicious content, right? Maybe you want to inspect it first before you will install it. So you use save module to do that, have a peek inside, and then if you are assured of the content, you could use install module to install that that content from the gallery. And now, because the PowerShell gallery has not been trusted yet by my system, I will get prompted with this, are you sure it's remote content and stuff like that message. So we say yes, we want to install it. It will download, put it into my program files. And now, if I want to get rid of it, I can actually use uninstall module as well. So the same things could be achieved using the native package management commandlets, but we will skip that for now. So additional package providers. We have the Chocolaty provider. We already saw the Chocolaty provider a little bit earlier. So we could use find package provider, and then we could to find it, and then we can use install package provider to add on Chocolaty functionality to package management. Now, because when we install a package provider, it's not available in my current session yet, so I have to start a new PowerShell session to make it available for this demo purpose. And let's run this code in this new window. So if we look at the packet sources right now, which are available on my system, we have the Chocolaty packet source here as well. And we can see it's also an untrusted external repository using this URI. And from that Chocolaty, we can, for example, install Zoomit. If I can copy it correctly. So what will happen now? We will go into Chocolaty and we say, I want from your source, I want to Zoomit Chocolate package, and I want to install it. So Chocolaty provider knows how to install Chocolate packages, and now we got Zoomit installed. So we can have a look, because Chocolaty installs it in the cChocolaty directory. And we see now we have Zoomit available for us. So this is a way to deal with external sources. Well, just a couple of weeks ago, the PowerShell team has made available a fork of the PowerShell gallery for internal use. It's still an early preview release, but you're able to run your own PowerShell gallery inside of your own data center. So you will be the ones authoring that content inside of it, and you are assured that you trust it, of course. So if we have a quick look here at the modules available currently, the modules I put in, we can see we have only three. So we have the AR tools, PS Script Analyzer, and Authenticode. So to extend our package management story, we can register that internal repository by using the register PS repository function, which is actually a function in the PowerShell GET module. Or we could use the native package management register packet source as well. So we just pick one. And the difference being is that from the register packet source, you see an additional parameter called provider name. So register PS repository already knows you're dealing with the PowerShell GET repository. And this makes it a bit easier for you to do. So now we have two PowerShell galleries available, the PS gallery and the CDC gallery. And if we have a look now, we can start and find and maybe install or save modules from that internal gallery. So I'm now targeting CDC gallery, and you see those same three PowerShell modules made available to us. So I think maybe a week ago, the PowerShell team made available another package provider to deal with NanoServer. So before a couple of weeks ago, when we dealt with NanoServer and we wanted to add in additional roles and features, we had to supply them when we were building the VSD. I don't know if anybody of you already built NanoServers. Just that guy, cool. Because they made available package management for NanoServer as well, we can actually now install a new package provider called NanoServer Package. So we're again on the NanoServer right now in a session. We will install that NanoServer package provider, and because we install it, we get available a method of installing roles and features from an external resource instead of applying it to the VSD file offline. So it will download the correct DLLs. And there we have it. We now have the NanoServer package provider available. We need to exit the PS session for a bit, just as with the earlier installation, to make that package provider available in a new session. And let's have a look at the packages installed on this NanoServer currently. So this provider is actually capable of digging into the NanoServer and figuring out which roles and features have been installed previously. But it doesn't stop there. We can also see like hotfix material already. So TP5 NanoServer came with a package for an update already, and it has been applied to the server. We can see that here. We can see that the storage package and the guest package and the DSC package have been installed. But for example, we are missing is the Defender packet. So there's no antivirus scanning on this NanoServer currently. And we maybe want to add that. So let's install that NanoServer Defender package. It will connect out to a source on the internet hosted on blobs.core.windows.net. So that's an Azure storage account from Microsoft. And it will figure out what to do. So it will download the cap files, it will download the culture files, and it will install them and then enable the feature. So because of package management, actually NanoServer management becomes a bit easier, right? Because you used to build NanoServer and then had to throw it away if you were missing something to rebuild it again from scratch. And now you can just extend the capability of that NanoServer in an online fashion. So a whole bunch of stuff is happening. And when it's done, we can see that actually the NanoServer needs to be rebooted for the Defender functionality to become active. But we can have a look now at which packages are installed. And we can see that, the Defender package actually made it in. And if we look at the Windows optional features of this NanoServer, we can now see that the Windows Defender feature has been added and it has been enabled by this package provider. So cool stuff. As with the PowerShell Get package provider, the NanoServer package provider also is a PowerShell module and it contains a couple of functions. The find NanoServer package, install and save NanoServer package functions, which are built on top of the package management commandlets again. So we could have also used find NanoServer packets and just do a wildcard search, for example. So that's it for package management. Any questions on this subject? Cool. I think another real gem for IT pros is actually script block logging. Who here already used transcripts? Couple of hands, good. So transcripts used to be only available in the PowerShell console host. Now in PowerShell 5, transcription has been made available for IEC as well. And what it does, if you run start transcript, it will start recording your input and your output into a file made to disk. So if you want to have this available all the time, you put like start transcript inside of your profile, and every time you start up a PowerShell console or ISE window, it will start a new transcription file for you. So we can type in, for example, hello CDC, and it will be recorded to the transcript file. Let's do a get process, and let's stop the transcript and have a quick look. So this is the how a transcript file looks like. So we have a start time. Some user who actually ran this PowerShell session, maybe it was a constrained endpoint, and we switched over to a run-as user. Which machine did it run on? Which application actually hosted PowerShell, in this case ISE, and a whole bunch of other useful information for you to track. We can see that we typed in that hello CDC straight after we started the transcript. We can see the printout as well, and we can see the processes we printed out. So good stuff that's made available for ISE as well. This is a way to, for example, backtrack all the stuff you put in on your command line and maybe turn it into a script file. New also in PowerShell 5 is a way to deal with this using group policy. But in the case of group policy, it means that transcription will be globally enabled for every PowerShell host. So this group policy setting is actually located on the computer configuration, administrative templates, Windows components, Windows PowerShell node. And here we have the turn on PowerShell transcription. So let's enable that. Let's put new transcripts in CDC, for example. And hit OK, and it's immediately active because this is the local policy. So it is a registry change, actually, what happened, and immediately the PowerShell engine knows what to do. So if we now start, first let's create a malicious script, right? So we create a script, csombadcode.ps1. It contains a function called foo, and it will print out the name we provided. So we create that little script file, and let's start a new PowerShell host because at starting time, the engine will evaluate the registry, and it will know if the transcription should be done or not. So in this case, transcription is started. And we could, for example, now run that malicious code, right? We don't know what's in it, but we know we want to run it for some strange reason. So we dot source it, and we now have that foo function available for us. And we get expected results. So we have hello CDC because the foo function just maliciously printed out our name. So now if we go and look, we can see that that CDC directory was actually created. We can see the a new folder has been created with the date, and a transcript has been put in there as well. So now we see that, okay, we've ran a dot sourcing from some arbitrary script, and some function was called. So we don't know if that script or that function was part of that script, but we at least have some evidence of what was going on, right? But maybe we need a way to also peek in that script and know what's actually happening on our systems. So the PowerShell team also made another setting available for us, also through group policy, called script lock logging. It's in the same group policy node, and we can say, okay, turn on script block logging. So let's do that. Let's start a new process. So script block logging actually will be logged to an event log, and the event log in question is under Microsoft Windows, and then PowerShell operational. Okay, so. Let's run that same bad code as we did before. So we still know the transcription is running. So we will log in the transcript what we are doing. But as you've seen before, we did not know from the transcript what was actually in that script file. So now let's have a look at the event log. And we can see that, let's see, where is it? Execute, is that it? So somewhere. Okay, here it is. So we can see that the dot sourcing actually created a script block, and it was logged here to the event log. So now we can peek in what is actually happening from some user who doesn't really know what he's doing. We can actually see what was run there. So the bad code just contains this little function. So now it's in the event log. And with that, I believe, yeah, we go back to the slides for a second. So that's a whole bunch of stuff for IT Pro specific, I think, which has been made available in WMF 5 and PowerShell 5. But Windows Server 2016 and Windows 10 and also NanoServer, they bring additional capabilities in the mix. Who here already played with PowerShell Direct? Also, one guy, cool. So PowerShell Direct is a technology where we can create PowerShell remoting sessions not over a network endpoint, but over a VM bus. So we are running Hyper-V. We can use new PS session and go into that VM or container, if you will. And a couple of commandlets have exposed capabilities for this. So we have copy item, enter PS session, and invoke command. And this, of course, will be demoed. And also new with 5 is PMP device management, which is another PowerShell module to easily deal with device management, so enabling or disabling devices, for example. Also new in 2016 is that Microsoft, for the first time ever, shipped open source software with Windows. And in this case, it's a PowerShell module. So we have PS Readline. If you ever wondered why the color coding in the console host is now yellow and you have that fancy tab completion, and that's PowerShell Readline. And also, a module called Pester has been shipped with Windows Server 2016 as well, which deals with unit and integration testing. So if you're writing modules and other code, you can use Pester to actually test your logic and the end result. And again, it's time for demos. So first off, PowerShell Direct. I'm here on my local machine, and let's create a new credential object here. And now we're going to, again, create a PowerShell session to that nano server. But in this case, we use a new parameter called VM name. And I got a couple of VMs running here. So the two VMs you have been seeing, the full 0.5 and nano 0.1. So what we'll say is new PS session to that VM name and use this credential. And now we have a PowerShell session running over the VM bus to that nano server. So no networking has been crossed here. It's if your networking stack is broken, for example, this is a good way to still interact with that VM. Also, if you're running in an isolated kind of setup, like you have NVGRE network virtualization, then this could still be a way to interact with VMs or containers running on your host. Now, invoke command is one of those commandlets they expose this functionality with. And invoke command itself also supports the VM name parameter. So we could use, without using that session, just invoke command directly against that VM with the VM name parameter. So in this case, you can see the build number. But the same thing goes if we just did a two session, because the PowerShell session utilizes the same mechanism. So same result. We could also do that PowerShell copying over that copying over a PowerShell session. So we use the two session again with copy item, but in this case over a PowerShell Direct session. And we copy in the calculator.exe on the nano server. It's no use at all, but it's just for demonstration. And we could, most importantly, just enter in that PowerShell Direct session. So now over the VM bus, we have remoted into this nano server, and we can do everything we want. So we can stop, start services. Really cool. Let's get back to this server. So PMP device management. It's always been a bit of a hassle dealing with server core and devices, right? So you had a device with missing drivers, and how would you figure this out? You needed to deal with a whole bunch of WMI namespaces and classes, and still probably you wouldn't get where you wanted to be. So Because of NanoServer, Microsoft invested in a new namespace, and they created the PowerShell module PMP device to interact with that namespace and to easily investigate the device management. So again, PowerShell session to the NanoServer, enter it, and here we have the module. If you look at the commands, it's just a couple of basic functions that are created. So we can enable and disable devices, and we can inspect them. So if you look at get PMP device, we actually see a whole bunch of devices printed out. We can filter those by friendly name or class. So let's look at the volume manager. And we can see the volume manager is OK. We can look at some additional properties. And we can see, for example, now that okay, the volume manager device uses the volume manager.inf driver and a couple of other things as well. Also, a pretty cool IT Pro feature, if you ask me. How are we doing on time? We still got a couple of minutes. So, desired state configuration. Anybody here already used desired state configuration? Couple of guys. Good. So, with the first iteration of desired state configuration, we and Microsoft had a lot of feedback that, well, if we put everything in a text file and it's human readable, then bad guys can actually reverse engineer stuff from those documents and maybe find out a way to infiltrate my network and steal a bunch of sensitive data. So what Microsoft did in V2 is actually they made a default encryption to take place as soon as we push one of the desired state configurations to a node. So what we'll do here is first we will create a configuration, which is the way you declare a configuration for desired state configuration. It's called new user. And what it will do is it will create whatever new user we will send it to it. So the data to go in here is defined here in this hash table with an array of another hash table. And the node name in question will be localhost. This is my host here locally. And we will allow plain text password storage in this case. So we will create a new user called CDC user. And it has this fancy password to go with it. So let's do that. And now first, let's generate that mod file and have a quick peek at it. So in that mod file, you can see now, because we allowed plain text passwords to exist, we can actually read that password. So normally, you would use certificates to hide this sensitive data. But still, the username itself is, for example, not sensitive data. So if somebody would have access to your node, they can reverse engineer at least half the bit of the user stuff. So if you would run Azure Automation DSC, actually the session before this one involved Azure Automation DSC, you would also compile these MOV files, and those will be stored in Azure Automation DSC in an encrypted at rest state. So in Azure, everything is encrypted. A node accesses the service. It will say, I need to pull down my MOV file. And the API for Azure Automation DSC will say, OK, I will decrypt it for you. Then the node pulls it down over HTTPS, so it's still encrypted on the wire. Then as soon as the local configuration manager, which is the agent piece for desired state configuration, gets that MOV file, it will put it in pending.mov in C Windows System32 configuration directory. And it will immediately encrypt the entire file using DP API. So the evidence on the box will be more hard to leverage for malicious activities. So let's have a look at how such an end result would look like. So we will apply this configuration now. And as soon as a configuration has been enacted, it becomes the current.mov file. And if we look at that, there's no sign of the username here. So good stuff. And now for a final demo, which is new with PowerShell 5.1, we have local user management, finally. Only 10 years too late, if you ask me. No more dealing with the WinNT provider. We can just use the commands from this module. So let's have a quick peek. It's a Microsoft.PowerShell.LocalAccounts module, which means it's a core module. It will be expanded on, and it will be it comes with PowerShell. If we look at the commandlets inside, we can see we can now interface with the local account manager, the SAM, with a whole bunch of commandlets. So we have add local group member, we get new local user, all kind of stuff you're into, right, when you're dealing with your local system. So let's create a new group on my server here. So we have the CDC group just created, just like that. And let's create a new user. So I've created a new user. It's enabled. And I can have a look at the users that are here now. So we have the CDC user, we have Ben. This user was actually created with DSC just before. We can add this Ben user to that add local group to that CDC group. Just as simple as that. Look at the members for that CDC group. You can see that Ben is now a member of this group. We can disable Ben. We can look at this current state. We can remove the group, and we can remove the user. So it's local user management finally made easy. And with that, that's the last demo for me. If any questions are still in your heads, then please make them available to me to answer. Nobody? Then thank you for listening.